Welcome to Crane Radio. Celebrate a life well lived.
Welcome to this first season of The Modern Crone, the 21st Century Shaman. I have invited the most powerful, eclectic and woke shamanic folk I know to talk with me about their take on shamanism and tap you straight into the minds and hearts of those who are the real deal 21st century shamans. Real people, real stories and a whole lot of mind-blowing, spirit-stirring juju. Rubiyanti Basuki was born in the highland of Dieng Plateau in 1979 and left home at an early age, engaging in life's lessons where most of us were cocooned in family and school. Her connection with spirit and the land through the Kajawan roots meant that she responded to life's experiences through what she calls a wider angle. Yanti believes that her path of complex life realities was and is a path of empowerment, held by Mother Earth to accelerate consciousness and spiritual evolution. She sees her experiences of life and her two children as clear channels of wisdom within that evolution. Yanti is also a successful businesswoman, yet also seamlessly holds the ancient living wisdom of the Javanese belief system, and this fusion defines her way to complete her journey as a walking mandala. Yanti is also a leader in the spiritual and social movement called Gurma Ripa, which supports others to live a real spiritual daily life. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome Yanti to the first season of The Modern Crone, the 21st Century Shaman. Welcome, Yanti.
Hi, thank you, Dani.
It's been a while since we've seen each other. So we met when Anna Layard and I were bringing groups across to Java for our creative spirit retreats. And I believe the first time I met you was when you came as a guest and joined us for a talk before dinner to explain to us the Kajawan way. And I have to say, I think you cast a spell on me, Yanti. And we've been friends ever since. So let's go straight to the topic of the podcast. So Kajawan is a spiritual framework, a way of living, which is part of the original Javanese culture and is shamanic. Could you explain to us what living the Kajawan way means?
Yeah, I would like to make a connection first between Kajawan and shamanism. As I experienced until now, and then doing a whole of my life based on Kajawan, and then I met you, and then I know more about shamanism, and then I make a connection. I think Kajawan and shamanism is the same way of living. It appear in the different places, right?
Yep.
And then about the Kajawan itself, I feel it as a way of life, not something complicated, not something that you need to learn so deep or so much thought, because basically it's a flowing water, just there, that's in your daily life. Like, you should be as harmony as possible with your environment, with your surrounding, not only with the human being, but with whatever around you, even to the things, to the material and to the immaterial things. Seems like they have no soul, but they are soul. Like to the stones, to the trees, to the plants, to the all the air around you. Basically, Javanese beliefs that's called Kejawen is a simple way of living of a people who lives in Java. That's it.
It's beautiful. And it is, I mean, these topics that you've mentioned of shamanism not being really a spiritual pathway but a way to live, like a state of being, and it being a state of being in flow and in harmony with all of our relations, you know, the two-legged relations, the one-legged relations, the feathered relations, the furred relations. And this has come up over and over again in the conversations I'm having with these other shamans in this podcast series. And it was immediately when I met you, and I remember you sharing an example of how you lived up in the, you grew up in the hills, and your father especially was a very spiritual man, and you'd be you'd be riding up on one of your motorbikes, and the motorbike stall, and your father would stop and speak to the spirit of the motorbike, and so this is really typically shamanic, that all phenomena and material things have an organizing energy around them. They have a consciousness to them, even a motorbike. And so is it a form of prayer, connecting with the soul of objects and phenomenon, or is it like more like a relationship, like a conversation?
In my experience, when I know that my father do that, it's just as a comment, like talking to a person, not as a spell. As far as I remember, what my memorize, I able to memorize that what my father did is nothing related to the spell. It's just normal talking, a conversation seems like a motorbike, just not a thing, but something with soul. And then you can communicate. So it's not only one way communication, but sometimes you wait a little bit, like waiting for the answer, that kind of stuff. And I didn't see it as a secret or mystical things. In the beginning, I feel, of course, it's a bit strange, but I get used to it that. And then, me, myself, now I repeat that habit. I repeat that conversations with my machines in the factory.
And it's about relationship, isn't it? It's about a reciprocal relationship. And I remember you saying that the motorbike would start. You know, your father would have a conversation with the soul of the motorbike, and the motorbike would start, and you'd go back up the hill and you'd get home. You know, so there was a response from what we would otherwise call an inanimate object, but certainly in the Kajawan way, it's not seen that way, is it?
No, because basically I think after long learning, knowing that kind of a communication, I take a conclusion that everything has a soul. And then you can make a communication, but the things also is about the energy. It's about how your energy, how your words transform to the energy. When you transform a good energy to the good, to the things, and they just reflect it back to you as a good energy as well. Because maybe when we just do or say something bad about, you are useless motorbike, I don't want you anymore. And then maybe we have a different reaction. Like a small example about the handphone. One time I've been talking like to myself, like, okay, then I think I need to buy a new handphone. And then my iPhone in the next 2 hours is just dropped and then I cannot use it anymore. I don't know what kind of a connection is that, but I really believe because I talk like that with the negative things because he or she was come along with me all the way, helped me a lot for having a good job, support me a lot in my daily things and whatever things I need for my business. He's always there. She's always there. But then I didn't say something nice, something good, like, okay, you work enough. I will make you rest. And then I need other support. You will stay there as my support. I didn't do any prologue with that. I just right away say something like, okay, I think I need a new handphone. Yeah. It's something like that you throw away somebody from your life, a rejection.
Yeah.
And then I get the follow-up.
Yeah.
In a long time, in a couple of hours, I have that right away. That's make me really do believe about that kind of a connection between my handphone and me, between the machines and me, all about the energy.
Yeah.
And I not even say words to my handphone, but my energy reject him or yeah. reject her for any without any reasons.
Yeah, and without the expression of gratitude and
exactly.
Yeah, which is really common in all shamanic cultures as well, is this the importance of expressing gratitude for our lives, yes. gratitude for the water, gratitude for the air.
Yeah.
And something that really struck me when I first started coming to Java and which you helped me understand was the beautiful connection you have with the actual island, like the land, the volcanoes, yeah. the energy in the land. There's the queen of the south in the southern oceans. And could you tell us a little bit more about that connection between the Javanese people and the island itself?
Yeah. We would say this is a relations between a host and the guest.
Beautiful.
The land itself, the island itself, they are the master, they are the host. Yeah?
Yep.
And then we are a human being. We created way much later after they exist. And surely we must understand well. We need to understand enough about our position, not exceed the limit. We are guests. And the home and the island and the land, it is already beautiful before we arrived. Mm. So one of our job is keep taking them care for let them keep beautiful. That's the best way as we are as a guest. We don't harm them by do the pollution.
Yep.
And then we don't harm them by making a mess.
Yep.
Killing the plantation or killing the forest or make it the river become unnatural, make a big lake from the river that is we just close them and make it as a big lake without any considerations for keeping the harmony.
Yeah.
And later it will give only more problem for us.
Yeah.
The things that I want to say, the connection is remember that we are human, we just a guest.
If only the whole human race could think that way about the wilderness, I'm sure we wouldn't have the same environmental problems that we have today. I mean, we're just so relatively recent on the scene, aren't we? So I know Merapi volcano has been huffing yeah. and puffing recently, and
yes,
sending out a bit of smoke. And in your lens, when you look at the volcano stirring, are you?
Yep.
How do you interpret that?
Well, actually, Merapi is very much regular to be active. And yeah. mostly every 4 years, we have an eruptions. And for now, it's already quite long, about 10 years. It's about 2010. It was last time it's an explosion.
Yep.
And now it's already 10 years without any explosion. Well, honestly, we are waiting for people who are from the spiritual line. We don't think this is a harm for us. This is one of the way that universe do their balancing.
Yeah.
And one of them by releasing some material from the volcano. That's it. And then other things, when we start talking about, some people think that this is kind of a punishment when the Merapi explode. And then we say, no,
yeah,
this is a bless for us, because when we see it as the economy side also, there's a few years after the Merapi explode, there is a, people can take the scent, yeah, from that. And then Merapi is the best scent ever from the building company, or for even for making the cement tiles.
Yeah.
For my company, we only use the Merapi scent. But it's also the neighborhood in Merapi has become very fertile about it. You can plan whatever things that you want to plan in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And of course, in 1 or 2 years, it will be some damage, but it's not really a damage, because then it is one of the way that the land, they do the balancing.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, some people living in that neighborhood, sometimes they don't know how to rest them, like to make the land having rest. They keep doing the plantation without any consideration for make it rest, and then the soil is become too tired.
Yeah.
And one of the way is by Merapi explosions, it could have rest for a while, do some fertilizer, very big scale of fertilizer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
It can cover a lot of things,
yeah,
yeah. But it's also like now, why also have an eruption in this moment, we try to make a connection, and then we do believe that the heat of the Merapi eruption now, it is really keep us heated.
Mm.
And that is very good also to kill the virus, to kill the bacteria. Yes, we are overheated sometimes until 40 degrees, but it's one of the way the nature helping us to face the situations. About the pandemic, that people has less effect,
yep,
from the COVID, because it's way so hot. And then it's also the volcanic ashes also make bacteria killed with that.
What a beautiful perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rebalancing, it's resetting, it's medicine.
Yes. That's what we believe in. And then you can see that from how people react here. People are not panicking.
Yeah.
People just accept it. Oh, yeah, explode. Oh, yeah, eruption. But it's not really like having a super panic right away, evacuated. We live in the rings of fire.
Mm.
Anyway, it doesn't matter where we go, we will find the volcano, we will find another mountain.
Yeah. Life goes on. What beautiful. Yanti, one of the striking aspects of Java are the sacred sites. And, you know, Borobudur, which is much older than what our learned history tells us it is, and Prabhanan, and then the beautiful temples in Solo that you've directed me to as well. And I've learned from you that these beautiful, very ancient sites are built in alignment with different features of the land, on ley lines,
yep,
in the land, And there are some that believe that they're magnifiers of the energy of the land.
Yep.
And you can certainly feel that, can't you, when you walk into one of these old temple sites and your consciousness shifts. And I know you dwell a lot in these old temple sites as well. Could you tell us what role they play within your spirituality, these ancient sites from our ancestors?
Yeah. Things that I want to explain my experience to find out what is their contribution to develop my consciousness. First, I want to tell about Borobudur. That's Borobudur is a greatest mandala, a accumulation for the all energy there, and basically is not a symbol of a certain religion.
Yeah.
Because basically that temple built in the time that Java has many religions, yeah, and then one of the biggest religions is the, we call that here, is the Tirta. It's mean water.
Mm.
And then because the architect is the Buddhist, and then also a lot of Buddhists also living in that neighborhood. So it's kind of a symbol of the Buddhist temple. But actually not. Borobudur is belongs to everybody who believes to the spirit.
Yeah.
Who has a spiritual side in themselves. Not because a certain religion, because energy and spirits doesn't connect with religion. It belongs to anybody. And then I feel that very much because my background as a Muslim, but I feel a connection between one temple of another temple and another temple that I visited. It's not about at all about religion, but it's a whole concept when you are pure, when you know what to do in your life, or even when you still don't know what to do in your life, but you come with the pure intentions to come there, you just right away connect with that kind of spirit. You feel at ease, you feel welcome, then again, you feel energized.
Yeah,
It's funny feeling in the very beginning. I was thinking like, what kind of a feeling is that? It's like a lot of waters coming inside, giving some coolness inside. And then when you left, you feel like, oh, I already miss. When will be the time I could come back again there?
So true.
This kind of a feeling I have.
It's so true.
About my experience in Borobudur temple. Short of the building, it looks like much different from Borobudur. In Prambanan, it's more slim, and then it's more feminine. That's kind of a notice I had in the beginning when I visited them in the very first time in 99. And then I think like, what's the feel? Yes, it's a feeling of feministic. It's a feeling like a quiet, still, and peaceful, of course. But it makes you feel complete after you visit a Borobudur, like a connection energy as well. I feel the same like what I visit Borobudur. It's keep connected. And then it's not like you visit a different temples. Yes, it's a different places, but the feeling are the same.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. And it's every time I've walked Borobudur, and, you know, I guess we should also mention that Borobudur actually, it's not an internal temple, is it? It's actually a massive mandala. And
yeah,
so it's like a pilgrimage walk as well, isn't it? No, you walk around it and you sort of make your way to the summit. But it absolutely changes you, even if you're not there for very long. And every time I feel when I come back down and back into the street and back into the town, it's like I'm looking at things with new eyes. Like I see,
yeah,
I see the same things and the same faces and people, but it's like I'm seeing them for the first time. It resets me. It is an incredible feeling.
Crane Leaving speaking.
I need a boyfriend.
Well, we have Senor Sombrero, Asakusa-san, or if you swing that way, Antoinette is available too. Check them out on crane-living.com and enjoy 10% off with Radio 10 when you cart out.
Oh, okay.
Terms and conditions apply. Don't get too excited. These are just names of our collections. We don't work that way. If you'd like to interact with real humans, come down to our flagship store at 46 Kim Yam Road.
Something that you mentioned before, which also struck me as very beautiful about the Javanese way, is how it's so accepting of different structured religions. So as you mentioned, you grew up in more of the sort of local Kajawan mindset, but you are a practicing Muslimic woman.
Yep.
you don't see any conflict at all with that, do you? Or Kajawan Christians or Kajawan Buddhists. So could you tell us a bit about that, how it fits? Does it come back to what you were saying before about it's all energy and spirit?
Yeah, sure. Well, Kajawan, again, is about the way of living. And then the religion born in the certain time, will the life is already exist. That's what we believe as people who are living in Java. There's nothing we need to fight for, that we need to against of. Because whatever religion, whatever beliefs, we are water. We are water, and the water is only rinsing, making things clear. So when you say, like a Christian, have their own way to pray, but again, Javanese belief, which is called Kajawan or the Tirta, is just flowing inside.
Yeah.
Because basically they're already there. They are in there already.
Yeah.
And then even when the Buddhists, they can be also as a Kajawan person.
Yeah.
Because when you need to know something like Kajawan, and then you see how people living here with a very simple and then very open way, basically we never make any conflict.
Yeah.
And then, well, Kajawan, as it actually is a soul of any religion, if you want to go deep. Because whatever you learn, when you learn certain religion, like you learn about the Buddha, and then when you go deep inside, all also about harmony.
Yeah.
When you learned about the Catholic, when you go deep inside, not only in the surface, there is also about the harmony. And the harmony is not only with the human being, but with the nature, especially.
So beautiful.
It doesn't matter what's religion, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The Kajawan lives in any soul of a people who believes to the God. That's it.
So beautiful. The essence of the divine. It's just gorgeous. The other area which I find fascinating about you, Yanti, as well, is that you're a hugely successful businesswoman, so you run a number of businesses, and I know you work. You've got a massive work ethic. You work very, very hard, and I love how you call all the teams in your business. You call them your business family, and I know you look after them very well. And here's another what I think can be often a common misconception, that if you're living a high spiritual life, if you're in contact with that essence of the divine, somehow maybe it works against being a successful businesswoman. So you know how some people hold that idea, like you're either spiritual and you're poor and you're in a cave, or you're super material and successful. But you're both. I'm both, and you're both. So you seamlessly merge this beautiful spiritual way of being with high business, and you do it very well. So do you see conflict there at all, or obviously not, because you're in, it's harmonized with you? Tell us how that works in your life.
Yeah, it's a bit funny to explain, but it's very true as what you said, because common people still think that spiritual life cannot be mixed with a normal daily life.
Yeah.
But if we could go deeper and we really know about the spiritual life, well, basically, spiritual life will give soul or give energy to run anything. It doesn't matter what you do. Like, when I do the tiles business and I do the deal with the client, and then we do the hard negotiations, for an example. Some people really think is talking about the numbers, talking about the figure, and then debating about the loss and advantages of making a business. But I see a business in a different way. Yes, when you only think about materialistic things, only think about money, the only thing you have in your daily life as a businesswoman, you can only calculate with the Excel list about is giving me advantages or giving me lost. That's it.
Yeah.
But then when we see in the different way, in a spiritual way, you don't need to think about that anymore. You have your own duty as a businesswoman. Think about the people behind you who work for you and who work with you. That's it. And then, I don't know how it's come from, but things are keep flowing in your direction, as what other people said. Some wise people said, yeah, when you say to yourself that then you don't need much things anymore, such many big other things will come to you, because you just say, I have enough. So things come to you like flowing, like flooded you. Yeah. But then again, the connection between a modern business woman and the spiritualism, there's no difference at all, basically. Any decisions that I take in the business decision, one thing I only follow here.
Your heart.
What we call that, a real spirit or a divine teacher.
Yeah.
When I say yes, so hear something inside say yes, I will say yes. Even sometimes it looks very controversial, and then it looks very much unlogic to take decisions. But then you don't think much anymore. Follow your heart and then do it.
Yeah.
And then try to be faithful with that kind of a voice inside of you.
Yeah.
Things are just there. It's our function now, like my function now as a businesswoman, is just collecting all the good energy around me, keep it flow in front of me, that it can be a good path to fulfill my destiny. That's it. And then I never push, I never reject too hard to the certain things.
Yep.
What is coming, I always say, what is coming is always good. Sometimes I also doesn't know how to formulate decision, but this is really a proof, that's really an evidence for me that the spiritual life that I already live for that long It's never been something separate with whatever you do in your life. Even you are a businesswoman, or you are a lecturer, or you are president, whatever. As long as when you take it as a main advisor, take your divine spirit as your real advisor, things are just flowing.
Beautiful.
No rejection. Keep faith.
Main
then you cannot make any difference anymore.
Yeah. So it's really, I guess how I hear you saying this is very similar to when we started this conversation, we were talking about a relationship with the soul of things and maintaining a vibration of responsiveness and gratitude and harmony.
Yeah.
And then that is reflected to you in your dealing. So similar to the motorbike, it's also similar in the business environment. So
you
experience what you are vibrating at. And which is totally gorgeous. I'd love to move mention in this podcast that you're also the founder of a really important community program as well, the Stritching Foundation, which I also very happily support. And this is where you're supporting women and children in their education and microfunding for their businesses and that sort of thing as well. So it's not just that you're a sort of hardcore businesswoman. You're massively influential in helping the community as well that needs a startup, aren't you? And do you see that as a really key part of your spiritual path as well, to give back?
Yeah, sure. And then I would like to say also, this is another angel in another part of the studio. There's a Danny that's also help us a lot in the developing one of a good business that now still running very well, even in the pandemic time. Yeah. It is other people has difficulties, but the things that the business that you support last time is running super.
Excellent.
And I'm sure it's come from the good intention and it's come from the pure heart. So that's why we are keep running.
Good.
And and answering about what you say is that part of my spiritual things, like to as a giving back, right?
Yeah.
Well, as a human being, as a grateful feeling, I would say, yes, that's the one of the reason, but it's not 100% like that. But one thing, as a spiritual person, you need to able to say to yourself that, yes, I have enough. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm enough. So what can you do with the rest of the things in your hand, right? For an example, when you have 7 plates of rice, how many plates you able to eat? Maximum 1 plate. And another 6 plates you need to share because it will give a different life.
Yeah.
When you take it for yourself only, this will rotten away. It have no use at all.
Yeah.
It will stay somewhere in the corner piling up. Yes, maybe if you give some benefits to the mouse or to the cockroach, to whatever, this is also good. But other things, when you can share with the people around you, which they need, it will give them a life.
Yeah.
So our intention is about do as much as possible to help others, not only because this is part of the responsibility, to giving back to the society as what we do, as what we get already from the nature, as what we get from our business, but about a giving and starting another better life for others. And then what we expect from that, not that they thanks us for that, but the only thing what we want, that when they already give some benefits for them, they can do the same for others.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a snowball. We only do one good thing, and then when we do one good thing to the seven people, other seven people will do another seven good things again. So
you've got
it's all about
a wave,
yes.
A wave of goodwill, which
exactly.
We know psychologically it works that way too. You know, people are, there's all sorts of studies that show that people are more likely to give an act of kindness if an act of kindness is done to them, or if they witness an act of kindness. It changes people when they see it or receive it, and they're more likely to pass it on anyway. And which is one of the things that I love about the way that you've set up your foundation, because it's, you're not just handing out stuff, you're setting up, and particularly women, aren't you, to be able to generate their own livelihood and then be able to go on and help others. And I love that. I love that it's maintaining their pride and their dignity as well, isn't it? Rather than just sort of throwing money at people. Which is good too, but this felt much more grounded to me. Oh, Yanti, I've still got so many questions to ask you. I wanted to go to your, I know you shared with me a little bit about, your earlier life, and you, in the introduction, you talked about that you have been through very intense experiences as a young woman and experiences that some may regard as hardship. And this has been a topic in shamanism as well. It's an archetype that's referred to, the wounded healer or the shaman's death, where the spiritual transformation is triggered in life through intense experiences. And it's not the only way to spiritual transformation, but it does tend to be quite a common one where people will go through hardship and difficulty, and it's through that sort of challenge, if you like, that they wake up spiritually, that they go on a spiritual quest. And you refer to your life as having elements of that, but you also refer to your life as the journey of the living mandala. Could you explain to us what you mean by that?
When we talk about the spiritual, I think we need to go to the lowest definition. That spiritualism is about being able to transform, and then the transformations is only because you experience things by yourself.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of a original experience when you able to make it to sing them down as a foundations to reach your certain level of wisdom, and then you'll be able to really grow to the certain level of spiritualism that is called original experience, that being able to be tell to other people to be an example.
Yeah.
Mandala is about central of an energy, that you are a complex energy there. And then what I experienced from the earlier hard life, I would say, that I was living in the house when I was 14, and then knowing many different persons with many different character, many different behavior.
Yep.
And then, of course, I face also a lot of difficulties with them, physically as well, mentally, psychologically. I experience things by myself. And then, first, of course, I become a person who really very much easy to get explode, very aggressive, because I must defend myself to keep survive. And then I was a street fighter for a couple of years to know myself, to test myself, and then of course to get some existency in the society.
Yeah.
And then I was working very much as the office lady, really like the office looks lady, very soft and then very much manner, very much behave, another transformation of me. And then life bring me to another different life again. And then what I did is just, I let myself open to everything that's happened to me. So I take that job, I take that chance, whatever comes through my face, whatever comes through my step, I just say, yes, I don't know why, but I keep doing that. Yeah. And then I feel that it's built me more calm at the end. Yeah. Because you experience so many things in the different level, and then you'll be able to sing them down. And then you really be able to take a conclusion, what was actually I did in my past? Mm. Why the life bring me in this hard way? And for what? And then what kind of a purpose? And then what I want to do in the life? And then what I will do later when I could be able already to settle down everything as a settled life, as a good businesswoman, as by material thing, I think just kind of okay, that I don't need to think about what I need to eat tomorrow, how my children go to the school, and everything in the level of enough. Yeah. What should I do again later? And then I take conclusion, yes, whatever just happened in my life, in my past, this is a kind of a pocket money.
Yeah.
It's a kind of
preparation.
I don't know. I call that a pocket money preparation.
Yeah.
As one of the weapon, to face life now.
Yep.
Because now my function is more as a mother of everybody, more like a problem solver, which is people think I never have a problem. Well, basically, I have no problem. It's only about some challenge appear in front of my step.
Yeah.
It's not a problem. And then I become a place that people feel comfortable to say things if they cannot find a solution. Seems like heavy things that people keep coming in my life and talk about their problem, more like what you do.
Yeah.
But I do in a different way. My place maybe not in healing like you, but more about to the conversation therapy, talking to the people who really think that their life is awful, their life is a tragedy. And then based on my experience in the past, I can make a resemblance. I can make an advice, or I can help them to compare what they feel and what my experience before.
Yeah.
So it seems like, okay, when my daughter said like, Ma, I have this problem, blah, 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 blah. And they say, okay, well, I've been experienced that also.
Yeah.
So I can tell them, not because I smarter than them, but because I did more mistakes in the past.
Yeah,
and then I can help them for solving their problem. And then, so, well, actually, what we call that walking mandala. I did not invent that word by myself, but then some friends and then Hayes also said that also. You are walking mandala. It's like make things alive.
Yeah.
Mandala is something that you think is a holy, and then you think it could collect a lot of good energy that make you feel at ease.
Yeah.
And then they said, yeah, when you are there, that's what we feel.
I can feel healing energy around you, and healing takes place in lots of different ways, doesn't it? Like,
yeah,
your ability to have empathy and connect with people, and people come to you to talk with you, and you know, you've got these beautiful healing aspects about you. You don't judge people. You listen very deeply. You have deep empathy given your journey as well. And you're able to talk with people and offer them expanded perspectives on how they may be seeing things, which then frees their energy. It frees their energy. So that's very much a form of healing, you know, and it's beautiful. And you certainly have a presence about you. I love being around you. I miss you. So Yanti, we need to wrap this up, but I would love to have you back on another season. But we're out of time. Thank you. But I've got one more question, which I've been ending each of these conversations with, and that is, if someone's listening to this and they're stirred by listening to the way you've explained your life and how you see things, and perhaps they haven't really seen themselves as being very spiritual before, but they'd like to do something, they'd like to start. For someone listening to this in their home, maybe they can't travel to a sacred site, or maybe they can't come and find a teacher or a leader, like a spiritual leader where they can talk to. What are three things they can start doing in their life today which will open them to a spiritual journey?
Well, some people think that spiritual is something complicated, but basically this is not complicated at all. The first key of being a clear spiritual person, first, just keep honest to yourself. Listen from where yourself said. And the second, your life is dependent on your breath. And in the breath, there's a life there.
Yeah.
Keep breathing.
Yeah.
Keep it good. Keep healthy.
Yanti, such a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for sharing some of your wisdom. I miss you. I hope I can come over to Java and see you soon. Thanks for your time.
It will happen very soon. Make it happen. Because no other, we cannot lean to anything in the world except to ourselves.
Yeah.
Make it happen ourselves. Be it. And it's my pleasure to have you, Dani. And it's always like that.
Thank you, Yanti.